round of the week, possibly the round of the year.
The deep dive of the round of the week.
Whip your boat.
There's a lot of stuff to watch there. It's very exciting.
I'm chairman.
I'm entering the lottery.
I'm Scottish. I'm angry. I'm easily triggered. I'm probably ginger.
Good evening, everyone. Episode 9, the Rider Podcast. Can't quite believe we're at episode 9 after such humble beginnings. But 16th of August, here we are at the end of Obon, and I'd like to welcome, as ever, Mr. Harding, Ben Harding.
Evening, John.
Mr. Ian McKenzie. Evening, Mr. McKenzie.
Evening.
Evening. And our special guest this evening, Michael Chen.
Good evening.
Hey, Michael.
Lovely to have you
welcome,
here.
Welcome.
Michael. Let me just put on Michael a bit. So, Michael, we will come back to you at that part of the show, but we normally just start this podcast with a little just review of the tour action this week in the States, in Japan. Basically, whatever you've happened to see on TV randomly in the last 4 days, particularly stuff that maybe finished this morning. I did catch the Wyndham Classic six-man playoff. It seems to be a thing recently. There's these playoffs with so many people in them. It should have been seven, actually.
What were they at? Were they like
15 under, I think it was. They were all at 15
six
under.
Six people at 15 under.
Yeah. And they shot 64, 65, a couple of 65s and two or three 66s all to make that number on the last day.
It's incredible,
pretty,
isn't
pretty
it?
Impressive. It takes a while to play a playoff with six people in it.
Right. How many did they go this time? Because we had the 8-hole playoff a few weeks ago, right?
They only went once. It was actually interesting. Adam Scott should have won. He had a classic Scott. He had that to win. And everyone else was all over the place. They all made par.
Right.
Scott had that and it was straight. He'd seen the putt a million times and he had too long. He's waiting for everybody else to finish up. He's standing there going, I've got that to win.
Oh, six people on the same hole.
They played as a six.
Yeah.
Oh,
six ball.
I'd love to see that.
Lord, can you imagine
six
that?
Ball. Watch
that?
Yeah.
Did you watch that, Michael?
I saw some of the highlights. And
did you?
Adam Scott, that was
That
was crucial,
And he'd seen
it, the line, he'd seen it again and again, the same putt. You knew it. You knew what it was going to do. And he basically smashed it straight through the break. But interesting, I thought it was interesting, six of them, the second shots, they're all over the place. Scott's pretty much the only guy on the green. There's the Korean guy smashes that over the back. There's another guy in the bunker. They all make par.
Right.
They're all over the place. They all make par. They all go back. And then the second time, Kisner birdies to win. And he hits it quite tasty, you know, and he hits it where at further than Adam Scott.
You know what's interesting about that Adam Scott reference is cue ball last week. I remember him saying, well, if the best swing in the world was going to win golf tournaments, then Adam Scott would win everything.
Absolutely.
So that kind of sums it up, right?
Yeah, his swing is so nice, but yeah, he's got the strange
it's slightly dodgy.
It's
a bit dodgy, that, I must say.
You saw that. Is it the guy who shot 13 who was in the playoff as well?
Yeah.
Oh, was he?
He was in the playoff.
Oh,
yeah.
God bless him.
Si Woo Kim,
came back.
Clatters it over the back. No, nothing. And he gets up and down from the impossible place, you know. But he didn't. And he just parred it the second time around.
Right.
But, yeah, it's pretty interesting, this trend for loads of players finishing on these same scores. Happened in the Olympics. And it's good fun. Playoffs are good fun.
Yeah.
Anybody else see any? Ian, you mentioned that.
Ben was just doing throat-cutting gestures. He hasn't seen anything. I didn't see much, but we did obviously have the Angelo cue ball. Strangey and Evo were all here last week for the Friday walking golf, which is good to see everybody go and join in and take part. And then the subsequent karaoke at 2 o'clock in the morning at Musu was quite enjoyable. I didn't know that Cubo was that good a singer.
He's Filipino, is he not?
He is Filipino.
I mean, exactly. I mean, one would assume that, yeah, for sure.
Well, I saw Strangey 2 days later practicing his putting at Rosica, and he said he thinks he might still have been a little bit drunk, so... It was a good day.
2 days later.
Great preparation for Sega Sammy. Yeah.
The next morning, all I saw that there's Bevan was due at 7:30 at Anazono, and there's the message, are you coming? And just slept in.
Cabano flu.
Oh, a no-show.
No-show. It's Cabano, yeah. Wow. Cabano flu, I think.
I haven't done one of those for a couple of years.
No-show. Yeah, it was a no-show.
Wow.
But so on the tour stuff, just to remind everyone, next week is Sega Sammy. So myself and Jimmy will be going back on the bag.
Oh, that's good.
To help out.
Any updates? So still no spectators?
No spectators, but I'm going to find out tomorrow if there's actually any family passes. And if there are, we'll grab a couple and see if we
can. Family passes means the pro can nominate some people to come
along.
Yeah,
they usually get a couple of passes that allow people to come into the clubhouse and stuff like that. And Second Sammy's good because the sponsor pays for everybody's lunch.
I was going to say, is there any free food? Yeah,
yep, free food.
Because that's really the key in the end.
I mean, it's seriously. You're in then.
What else is there?
I thought there's no such thing as a free lunch.
You're absolutely right.
A different level of pro tour analysis on the Niska Ride.
You've got to pay in the end.
Where do you get a free lunch?
Where are the free lunches? Show me the way. That was good. And I really wished I had done a lot more walking golf this season. Crikey, it does get you fit. I could feel my lack of fitness, particularly on the back nine. It's really good. And it's just how so many of us played when we were young. So I think it's been a great initiative. I hope Hanazono and the courses that are having it, you know, continue to realize it. You know, I hope they're not sort of perceiving it as
that just because something. It's quiet, they're allowing us in, as it were.
Yeah, I hope it's something that they kind of get, because I just see the looks of like total bewilderment from, you know, the sort of Japanese.
But quite nice doing? Looks as well.
Yeah, you're walking, kind of in a way, oh, maybe I'd like to walk. Yeah.
Right.
Yeah. So we had the Masters, the Jolly Masters 2 matchups, which we both eyewitnessed, I think.
That's right.
So we had Ashley versus Braimon, F19, right. And Jimmy versus the Dambagger.
Right.
Did you want to bring on – I know we had some because there's a lot of people playing that day, and so we all were mingling on the green prior to the round, and we did talk to some of the combatants.
Yeah, I was lucky enough to bump into to Damo. Before the round, and also Jimmy. Here's a little snippet of what happened.
So I'm here at Hanazono Golf Club on a Friday afternoon, representing the Nisco Rider podcast, and I happened to have come across the Dambagger, who is playing Jimmy today. And was just, how you doing, mate?
I'm doing very good. I'm feeling confident.
Are you?
Yeah.
And what is that confidence based on?
It's just based on the fact that I haven't hit a ball for a week. I'm very excited.
You're really excited. And the fact that you probably get 8 shots or something like that, right?
Yeah, 8 shots, but it is Jimmy, so I'm gonna have to get in his head.
You're kidding? What was that, Ken? Gonna get whipped. Is Jimmy feeling it as well?
Jimmy's feeling pressure.
Is he? Hey, Jimmy. We're just wondering how you're feeling about your match with the Dambagger this afternoon.
I'm not too worried. How's Damo feeling about the black tees?
Oh, you're not playing off the backs, are you?
No, it's whites all day.
Whites all day. Okay. So you're just going to have to club down a bit, Jimmy. I guess that's the answer.
Quite confident. We'll be fine.
Yeah?
Yeah.
All right, good. Well, maybe we'll chat to you a little bit later. Thanks, guys.
Cheers, Ben.
Yeah, so that was the pre-round interview, and I guess it's you guys that followed those guys around. So how did it actually pan out?
Yeah, I mean, John and I were playing our own little match at the same time, but I think Damo went out in 42, Jimmy went out in 39, so Damo was very much ahead on the net. I'm looking quite comfortable, but I'd just like to say, I think this is important numbers to read out for the way that to show how badly Jimmy played to lose. Damo finished on the back nine, which is obviously the first
the front nine, yeah.
Double bogey, 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 quad bogey, bogey.
That was Jimmy's finish.
No, that was Damo's finish.
To win.
To win.
No.
Yes. So he'd open up a bit of a lead. He had a bit of a cushion by that point.
He had a bit of a cushion by that point. Jimmy on the fourth finally said, I don't know if you remember this, he finally said, sod it, I'm hitting driver. Yeah. And then proceeded to smash one up the middle, chipped to the hit the front of the green, chipped up, made the par. And we thought, oh yeah, we're all on here. And then I think he might have done it again on the next hole, Damo. You can remind me. The par five, he hit a pretty good shot. The par five, they both made bogey. But then on the par four after, the sixth, Jimmy hit his drive into the pond on the par fifth tee box.
Right. Not easy to do. What's that, 350 yards or something?
320 yards or something.
Mysterious bounce. I thought it was safe, and it just somehow ran all the way down there. We couldn't find it anywhere. Yeah, it ran all the way down
there. But it was, I don't know if you know the Japanese phrase, dorojiai, which means mudslinging fight.
Yeah.
Which what it sort of it turned like, into for the last 8 holes. Who could play least
poorly?
Who could play the worst and still win kind of scenario?
And Damo, do you have any thoughts or comments? Did you feel lucky or did you feel like you played well?
I just remember on the same hole where Jimmy went into the water that I had an amazing flop shot onto the green. And I think I asked John, did you see that? I think that was the moment I knew I had
it. Did you see that shot?
Did you ask me to get your ball? You didn't, did you?
Presumably you guys were just raking bunkers for them and repairing pit stuff, just generally.
Yeah, I was floundering along. But it was
floundering.
It wasn't great. Ian played very well. I got smashed.
Yeah, John was working up a temper.
I was remaining calm. But it's good. So, yeah, Jimmy did not play his sparkling best. And I get that Damo just started well, very stable, no mistake golf. It kind of got loose at the end, but he created a big enough cushion by that point.
And Damo did, throughout the round, he had a couple of nice little, what I like to call little Irish sledges or little leprechaun sledges. It was
Which, you know,
he did say to be sure.
To be sure, a couple of times. I said,
he said he did it for comedy
Irish
effect.
People say that.
He said he did it for comedy effect.
The best line, though, was on the last hole when we're walking down, you know, I think there was a 4-stroke difference. And it was like it needed to be eagle versus double or something along those lines. And just as we hit the tee shots, Damo says, oh, it looks like I'm going to have to poison Ben's drink for the next round. And I was like, Jimmy, he's talking about
The next round
already, haven't even finished.
That was a bit risky, wasn't it?
That,
especially
that was
against the gym meister.
That was tempting fate, but then he proceeded to smash it straight down the middle of that.
Yeah, he did.
Right.
So, hang on, before we jump on to Ash and Brian, Michael, can you just quickly explain to us what the Jolly Masters is and what the idea behind it was?
But the main idea behind it was in most nice golf clubs around the world, you have a club championship. And because most of us here don't belong to a club, we are the club, like all of us. I thought I'd sort of replicate that sort of club championship event.
Yeah.
And it's a single elimination knockout tournament. I know where I'm from, the US, a lot of clubs will do either a net stroke or a match play. There's sort of a split of both. Wasn't sure which one to do. I'd sort of read as much as I could about it. Seemed to be pretty split down the middle. Different strategies, of course.
Mm.
And I thought it'd be sort of a low investment, pretty easy sort of thing to do that could be kind of fun. It'd be different from the team play that we've been doing, last year. So
for people that don't know, there's the there's a Jolly Fox, which has the fox and the mice. So how did you set the tournament for the Jolly Masters?
So basically with two brackets, so it's almost like an NCAA bracket. One side of the bracket, the left side of the bracket, are the low handicappers, the fox, and the right-hand side are the mice. And so ultimately in the final, there'll be a fox playing a mouse.
Right.
And thought that would be kind of fun to see who could be the best net handicap golfer.
And it means that everyone gets a chance regardless of handicap and all that sort of stuff.
Exactly.
Right.
Yeah. So the high handicappers are all on one side playing against each other, and then the low handicaps on the other side. So you haven't got, you know, a mouse being pitched against the fox in the first round,
which might freak them out.
And his day is done. And stuff like that,
And then the finale will be held at Hokkaido Classic, and everyone who's played in the bracket will get to go play. And, you know, I'm sure we'll have a little side game.
Yeah, for sure.
Smoking cigars and having October snacks afterwards.
Yeah. Was that mid-October?
October 15th,
right? So I
must ask you, Michael. I heard that the other day when you played at Hokkaido Classic, you got the marshals on your case a couple of times for slow play.
Yeah.
What's the story there? What do they regard as slow play at Hokkaido Classic?
Well, we actually did the round in 4:45,
right? 4:45. Which doesn't sound ridiculous to me.
Especially for a walking course and a tough course like Hokkaido Classic. Mm. Well, it was a little bit windy that day, so.
Their expectations are a bit higher, are they, or what?
Not quite sure. We actually weren't going that slow.
Okay.
I'd like to play it in 4:15.
Might have just been a misunderstanding or something.
Yeah, I do know that they a lot of the courses around the Chitose area, they do have, back, you know, So back in the day, so pre-COVID, they had a lot of gaijin, you know, whether it's Korean or Chinese or wherever, and that there is a propensity to, you know, play.
Can be
very slow. So I'm sure there was just probably a little bit of nervousness with some foreigners being on the course.
And to be honest, the marshals didn't bother me. I think it's good to have them around.
Yeah.
Because,
yeah,
you know, sometimes it doesn't take much.
It's better than what happens around here.
Oh, absolutely.
Yeah. Where you've got nothing.
I think there should be management of the course.
Oh.
It's especially on busy days. You know?
And just explaining to people, you know, you've dropped a hole, move aside, or
exactly.
Hurry up. Thanks, Michael. That's awesome. So the other match that went on, we had Damo Des and J-Mac, who we had.
So the match that I followed was Ashley versus F-19 or the Ash versus F-19. You know, the interesting thing for me from the get-go was that both of them were playing off 12. So this was a scratch game, which is pretty exciting when you think about it. And you know, it started off relatively straightforward, and they both got bogeys on the first hole with a shot. Then Ash had a solid six on the next par three, and Brian parred it. At which point, you know, I think as I mentioned last week, you know, when you're sort of three or four shots up, you can start to sort of play a bit conservative and maybe play a bit match play. Sadly, although Ashley bogeyed the next hole, Brian got a rather unfortunate 10 that involved some magnetic rocks and water and all sorts of wonderful stuff.
Which I think brings us to the other side point that we've discussed this week, is that we you know, Michael's obviously very kind of us, but put us all onto the Grint, which is fantastic. But we are thinking about petitioning the Grint to come up with an F-19 button.
We are. Because I think after that hole we thought, well, if there's a button that you can press that automatically presses sand, greenside bunker, fairway bunker, OB, water.
Penalty area.
Basically presses everything.
Beer.
Then that's your F-19 button for a 10, and your job is done, basically.
Yeah.
Shout out to F-19. It was very unfortunate. It wasn't as bad as it sounded. But suffice to say, and you mentioned, what was it, a mudslinging, whatever that Japanese word was. But it was a kind of bit of that. There was a notable birdie from Ashley that I think sort of started to change stuff. On the 11th hole, which is effectively the second hole. And in the end, they only finished two shots apart. So handicaps amazingly figured it all out. But Ash got narrowly up by two shots. Thoroughly enjoyable to be with them. Both very great gentlemen, both helping each other out big time.
Nice.
It was really good.
Yeah, I spoke to Ash before the route. I didn't get a chance to speak to Brian properly, but Ash said he'd really found something. And I played with him a couple of weeks previously, and he was feeling very sort of nervous and over the ball and wasn't enjoying it and was sort of maybe overthinking it. So he said he'd found a way of just relaxing, enjoying the game a bit more, not feeling so nervous. So obviously,
So I think what happened with him is that he did have some poor holes, but what he's learned is how to move on to the next hole without worrying too much about it.
Carrying it over.
And I think that's where the sort of confidence or remembering, you know, that you do have some capability just narrowly helped him in the end. Mm. It's pretty close.
Indeed. Do we have a list of the forthcoming matches? I don't have my phone.
I think Damo's playing Roach. Damo Des.
Damo Roach. I think it's Lefko Greenwood. I know that. I'm playing the winner of that.
So that one I've booked into.
That's right. You were into that.
I think Michael's.
Michael, you may have it.
Yep. We have Okada versus McGregor. We're waiting for McGregor to get out of quarantine.
Yeah.
But he should be back soon. You got Johnson EJ versus Ryan McKay.
That'll be a doozy.
That's right. Ryan was out there against playing John, right, the other day as well.
Yeah, rumor is that McKay is vying for a neutral location because EJ plays at A-Brand all the time and he's refusing to play.
I think that makes sense, to be fair.
And then we got Chef Robbins versus Big Country.
That's right.
Bilbo,
and
yes.
And yeah, my match with Craig Andrews finished on Saturday.
Oh, did he play?
Did he play?
We did.
Oh,
we
sorry. Did. Sorry. Oh, well, this is breaking news.
Tell all. Tell all.
Well, to be honest, I was a little bit nervous going in because I looked at Craig Andrews' last 10 rounds, and he had two rounds net 66, one round net 69, and one round net 72.
Yeah, that's right. Yeah.
And that's pretty damn hard to beat.
Yeah.
So yep. I said, if he has one of those, I'm in big trouble.
Right.
So I did a little advanced scouting, and this is probably a little known fact to the Niseko community, but Simon Robinson and Craig Andrews were college roommates.
Yes.
And so I
was aware of their very old friends for sure.
Yeah. I said, you know, how do I get into Craig's head?
And,
you know, those of you who've played with Craig know he's a big conspiracy theorist. Mm-hmm. And so we kicked around ideas on how to get into his head. So, you know,
QAnon, basically. You just brought up QAnon.
Well, I heard from Simon that Craig is could be an anti-vaxxer. So I said, oh, there's a topic I can get on. And so as we got in the car, it's getting ready to go tee off. I said, hey, Craig, I heard you're not getting your vaccine. He said, oh, no. You know, I just don't know. I'm not fond of this particular vaccine. I said, well, you know, it'd be really kind of you if you wore your mask this whole round.
That might be really? Sledge of the Year.
That might be Sledge of the Year.
Actually, we should have a little
Sledge of the Year.
Sledge of the Year.
It needs to be a jolly like a Sledge
prize,
Award.
Prize giving.
So he had given us a sort of odd look and went busy with his clubs. And I sort of reminded him as he got towards the tee, as again, being, you know, really nice for the community if you put on your mask.
The double sledge.
That time you brought the community into play. Oh, okay. Make it fast. Yeah.
So now he's giving the full peer pressure, right?
Well, I figured with his recent good play, it was really important for me to get off to a good start.
Yeah.
Because he got 14 strokes on me. So
14.
14. So the way I thought of it.
I know how you feel.
And I'm not a high handy. I'm not a low handicapper, right? Mid handicapper.
No, absolutely, yeah.
14 is a lot. And so my mental framework was like, I'm starting 14 down in the hole, mm-hmm. gross.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
So I just had to start making up strokes. And right. So I went out par, and I could see he was starting to press.
Right.
Getting a little bit concerned. And then I thought to myself after number two, I said, okay, I can see in his eyes, I got to par this hole. If I par this hole, it's over.
Sorry, so where did you play?
I had him.
Yeah. So we and it started on the back nine. Or the front?
On the front nine.
Okay, nice.
So I parred number one, parred number two.
Nice.
Went to number three, and I was, you know, in a rare occasion hitting it down the middle.
Uh-huh.
And number three, I bombed it, you know, down, you know, halfway past that left bunker.
Yeah,
and,
yeah.
You know, I knew I was going to par that one, and it was. Then Craig, after that, went, I think, 7, 7, 7, 8, and by the seventh hole, I had clawed back 12 of the 14 strokes.
Oh, wow.
But still only 12, though.
Yeah. Yeah.
Still
isn't
only
that extraordinary?
Head?
Yeah. So by then, I figured I was only down two with 11 holes left. I was in decent shape.
Right.
Couldn't really blow up. So.
Right.
Yeah, fantastic.
And in the end, was it relatively
I straight? Beat him by four net.
Yeah, still not that many,
yeah.
Right?
Yeah, right. A lot of these matches are working out quite close.
Yeah.
Surprisingly, yeah. You think the stroke would have a bigger volatility, but actually.
But that's a great insight into close. The psychology of, well, it's not match play really, because obviously it's stroke play, but match play kind of mentality pretty funny, man.
Yeah, one-on-one. Yeah.
That's an extraordinary
sledge. Was the music, one thing we wanted, was the music. What was the position on music that day?
Was he playing his rubbish?
He did not have his speaker.
70s.
He was very
house
serious.
Music.
I was told by Simon he really wanted to win. So, as we all do. But I was probably more concerned than he was, since he had such low scores recently.
Yeah. Oh, that's cool. So, who does that mean you're playing next?
I am waiting for the winner of EJ and Ryan.
Okay, cool. And any view on who you'd like to meet, or it would just be
I'm
a pleasure?
I'm happy to play either. Both great guys. Great fun to have a match with either one of them.
I've definitely seen both of them wearing masks before. I think
well, that's good. Excellent.
It should be okay.
so good. Yeah.
Fantastic. Okay.
And so were there any other, sorry, Ian, were there any other rider master tournaments that we
think that was
matches
it.
Up that we haven't? I think that's that probably about it, yeah. Right?
That was it for last week.
Cool.
So yeah. I'm looking forward to, I think I'm playing the winner of Greenwood Lefco.
Yeah, okay.
I come in Friday morning.
Oh, so that's the first matching of Fox and Mouse.
No. I got like a, I think, you know, for whatever, I was.
You got to buy. I got to buy. Couple
so
rounds.
I've been waiting.
So
I'm on the Fox side.
Russ and Trevor are on the Fox side.
Yeah.
Apologies, Russ and Trevor.
Yeah, I think wow. they're what are they, 13, 14? They're right on the cusp.
Yeah. Right. So, and you're going to do live. There may be some, we're talking about possibilities of some. You're going to be interviewing. You're on that game. You're on that game.
Well, I'd like to say to, you know, well done to Michael, because obviously this match play format is something that used to happen in Nisko about 15 years ago.
Right. Mm.
All the Japanese guys used to do this.
Or the match up format. Right.
Well, they'd all say you got to play your match by this time, or all the Japanese guys did. So, hats off, fantastic. But the fact that now people are trying to get the shotgun seats so they can actually watch the match,
trying to buy seats.
Well, of course, I'm doing it with my media pass, etc. But frankly, I would have paid money to go and watch that. So yes. I'm quite excited.
I did like the way you introduced yourself. Hi, I'm Ben Harding from the Rider podcast. When you were talking to the Dan Bagger.
One has to.
Yeah, yeah. It's impressive.
Yeah. Otherwise, they'd throw you off the course.
I just realized that Dan Bagger here sort of looks like Paul Schaefer from the Letterman show.
Yes, you remember? He does, doesn't
and
he?
And you're David Letterman, JB.
Yeah.
And you got your sidekick over there.
Yeah. Exactly.
Peanut Gallery.
Dan Bagger. Exactly. There he is.
Fantastic.
Very good. Well, maybe it's time to – let's just veer. We've been talking to Michael a lot. So thanks for coming on again, Michael. Just for those of who are listening who don't know you so well or know your background, can you just give us a quick maybe the golf, how you got into golf and how that came about, and then the Nisko part. And then, of course, we need to talk about significant events in your golfing history that occurred on the 17th recently at Hanazono and other things besides.
Yeah, well, I guess I started golfing in my mid-20s when I was in graduate school. I sort of introduced to it by my late uncle, who taught me so many things about enjoying life, including golf, cigars, and cognac.
Was that over in the Boston area?
Yeah, it was in Boston. Cool. And didn't really get a chance to play much until I went into the casino business, where golf became a central part. Well, not a central, but a tool that we use a lot.
A key lubricant.
Yes.
Shall we say.
Yes. And it was very, very I was very fortunate to have golf in that industry, in the casino industry, because most of the casinos use golf a lot just as an entertainment vehicle for the customers. Mm. And we got to associate with a lot of very famous golf people.
Right.
I had the fortune of knowing Butch Harmon, opened his Butch Harmon School of Golf in Macau. I had a chance to get to know his son, Claude, quite well.
Right.
And before he was known, he was just sort of running Butch's Dubai school. And now he's, you know, top 15 coach in the world now. And
oh, the son is he?
Yeah. He coaches Kepka. He coaches quite a few of the top
players.
And
is Butch still coaching or not?
He is, although he's getting up there.
Right.
Gosh, he may even be his early 80s now.
Okay.
But Butch is just an incredible guy. A great guy. Like, if he could come and just sit at Cubano's and he'd just tell jokes and stories all day.
That's awesome.
It's just incredible.
That's awesome.
I got him to give some clinics and stuff. We did an event with Jordan Spieth just a couple of years ago, and that was great fun.
You were telling me about that the other day, right? You had a little bet with him, didn't you?
Yeah, we got to do a little gambling. Imagine that. I managed to win $100 Aussie from Jordan Spieth, which he signed, and I've promptly put on my wall. It, yeah. Of course,
it's in the man cave.
The man cave. There's some good stuff in there. Yeah.
So you know, because of that, I've gotten to play a lot more golf over the last 10, 15 years, and I think it's very special because it's really an allegory for life. You know, it's something that you never get perfect at. There's always stuff about making good judgments, learning, and then the camaraderie involved in it is just, it's amazing. I mean, the friends that I've made, I mean, golf has been such a door opener here in Niseko. You know, I was already here, but, you know, followed on a lot of great work that, you know, Ian's done in pioneering golf here.
Yeah.
And so much interest here. And, you know, for me, it was a great way to meet a lot of people.
It's actually very interesting you say that, because I don't think we would have described it as a sort of a facilitator up until relatively recently. But actually, coinciding with your interest in it, and you know, when did you arrive in Niseko? 3-4 years ago, something like that.
Well,
maybe a bit longer.
Well, I've been coming to Niseko since early 2010, but I sort of came up in late 2019 to open Haku Villas.
Yeah.
And then COVID hit and we didn't leave.
Hung out. like many of us, yeah.
Sounds familiar, yeah.
But I think in a way you're sort of a mini poster child of just how that can happen, you know, the suddenly, and by the way, you know, Ed Downer and Evan and all these guys that might otherwise be on the, you know, maybe on the periphery, golf has sucked us all in, and it's been quite extraordinary, isn't it?
Yeah. I find that, you know, especially, I mean, I actually just had a phone call not long ago from the H2 team who were recruiting somebody who wanted a reference, and there's definitely a feeling of, that's part of the golf guys.
Yeah, right.
What? How can I help you?
So if they can, for sure.
Yeah. Right. So that's good.
Which
to
is
see.
Nice. Yeah.
So, sorry, I'm going to just jump in real quick. So, obviously, coming up here and starting to play golf, what's your thoughts on the quality of the courses around here?
I think they're great, great fun, challenging resort courses. I particularly like Hano, Niseko Golf. I like as well. It would be great, I think, in this area if at some one day a developer developed proper practice facilities that would allow us to attract a world-class competition. And then, you know, you could take one of the existing courses and really make it world-class in terms of the maintenance, the grounds, the grass, how they keep it, you know, they bring in a roller where you can double roll the greens and that sort of thing.
Yeah.
Because the avid golfers around the world will travel to go to really tough flight golf courses.
Yeah, no, exactly. We were talking about this the other day. Again, when I popped in to see Michael when he was still in the quarantine, yes, I was wearing a mask and standing 10 yards away. You know, one of the things that he mentioned was that in order for us to really cement golf here, so we, as Ian will attest, we have some extraordinarily good golf courses near Chitose, maybe 5, 6, 7 of them. But at the kind of courses that would attract golfers that are used to so-called world class, or at least you know nationally kind of significant golf courses, but in Niseko itself, we don't necessarily have the challenge there, so we need to surround it with all sorts of other stuff, right? How was it you put it?
I'll give you a good example. I have a really great friend of mine who happens to be a quite well-known Hong Kong tycoon. He's got a great golf society that he avidly golfs with. He actually owns a lot of property here in Niseko.
Okay.
And I said, you know, you guys should come up in the summers and bring your whole golf group here. The golf in Niseko is amazing.
Right.
And I said, you know, I'm going to organize a tournament for you guys and do something for you guys, whether it's a jolly-like thing or something else. He's like, oh, yeah, that sounds great. He says, but can we do it around Chitose?
I know. Yeah, exactly. I said, exactly.
No, come on. I said, brother, you got to come up here.
Yeah, right.
I said, you want to increase the value of your assets here in Niseko? Right. Bring your guys here.
So somehow we got to get some hooks in. So it's golf plus, basically, is what we're talking about.
Well, yeah, you need the software on top of that. If the hardware is not good enough, you need great software.
Right.
Yeah,
exactly.
That's a good way to put it.
And then when you look at the courses around Chitose, they obviously have a lot of traffic, but they also have a tremendous amount of revenue. They invest a lot of money into course maintenance. So if you go and play even my course, you know, they've
Elm, right?
Elm is just
beautiful.
Beautiful all the time. The fairways are immaculate. The bunkers are perfect. You know? So, and that's just for the run of the mill Sapporo market.
Sure.
So if you're going to bring people in, then you're absolutely right. I think having absolute top notch maintenance, especially the greens, correct me if I'm paraphrasing, but I mean the layouts here are, from our experience of looking after international golfers, the layout of the courses are fantastic.
Mm-hmm.
Yep. They're interesting.
Oh, they enjoy them. Once they're on them.
No question.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Absolutely.
Cool. Okay, so I guess we move on to the recent developments on the 17th hole at Hannah's Honor, which is part of the motivation. I think we wanted to bring Michael in for a while.
I can't believe it's taken finally, this long
I know.
Michael's been on the list of guests for a while.
We should have, and I think, because he'd been away, right? You've been jollying away in the States.
But also, you know, very correctly.
Did the right thing.
What do you call it?
Quarantining.
Self-quarantined. Yeah. And then just came out, and then
two days after quarantine ended.
It's amazing. Let's put it in perspective, isn't it? Yeah. How do you know? I mean, I saw
only one round in, right, Michael?
Were you playing that well that day? Was there any signs that you were hitting the ball anywhere near the hole?
I
know.
So seven, six.
It looks like a slot machine.
It looks like something a bit weird.
Hang on.
For sure.
Damodis has just brought up the round.
Damodis.
Please listen, everyone. We all sat on 10, right? Yeah. Kicked off with a cheeky par. Very nice. And then it was a double bogey, par, double bogey, triple bogey, double bogey, one. Double bogey.
Yeah,
you cannot write stuff.
You cannot. I mean, how did it happen? How did you?
Well, clearly, we got to watch out for Jay Bill when he comes back, because quarantine is the prerequisite for a whole
exactly.
Yes,
exactly.
But no, I was having a obviously ragged round up until then, and but I was
ragged.
Ragged. But there's two things that I really enjoyed about the day. One, I do a lot of walking when I'm in the U.S. playing courses there, and I love walking because I feel like you really get a feel for the course. You get time to think about your ball.
Agreed.
And so I was excited to finally have a chance to do a walking run. I've been wanting to do it earlier in the year, but I just haven't had time.
Mm.
And I was playing with literally my two oldest friends in Niseko,
right?
Mac and Kent.
Yeah.
And that was really special. And then also I had a chance to play with Scott Strange. And he's a fantastic fella.
Right.
So it was really neat to get to know him and hear about his 36 holes in one and two albatrosses.
It's
and
insane, isn't it?
His 60 shot. It was incredible.
I think he won the Volvo China Open as well, didn't he?
He won something.
He won Volvo China and he won Wales.
It's an incredible record.
Yeah.
Incredible. And I had also been inspired by his lefty shot on 13.
Yeah, I saw that.
Against the tree.
That's outrageous.
With spin.
Outrageous.
To the green is incredible.
But with a right club. Not with a lefty club.
He turned it upside down. It's incredible. And then so going to 17, I said, it's time to break out a cigar. And Mac was only going to play nine holes. And so I know Mac likes to smoke cigars. I said, you want a cigar? And I should have offered him earlier. So before the 17th, I literally broke out a cigar.
Nice.
Cut it.
Yeah, I saw you were smoking when you were celebrating the hole in one. I saw you had a cigar. Yeah,
but they were sparked up before you teed off.
I was celebrating before I teed off.
Because we need to know everything that you did in order to recreate
Exactly. I want to know everything. I'm going to try and get one of these.
Well, the key thing was that we were on the tee box. I took out my phone because I was telling Scott about this shot I took the day before at Hokkaido Classic on number 18, which is I hit this awful tee shot to the right, and I was trapped behind these trees. And if you played Hokkaido Classic on 18, you got to go over the water to the green. And I had hit a drive, so I had 160 yards, and I had this little window maybe 3 feet wide between two trees and with a small tree that had branches maybe, you know, 10 feet up. So I had to hit a low shot over the water.
Right.
On a green, and I was having a match with F-19. Right. And he already made the green, so I had no choice but to go for it. Right. And, you know, it's one of those things where it may have been the best shot I ever hit in my life.
Yeah.
Really. And they F-19 took a picture of where the ball was and the positioning. And so I was showing Scott this picture. And, you know, it's like a 1 in 1,000 case for me where sure. you imagine a shot and actually execute as you imagine.
Okay, cigar.
Positive. So sorry, but for the Hokkaido Classic shot, what was the club you hit for that?
So what was interesting was I that distance I would probably have choked up on a hybrid.
Yeah.
But because of the low tree, I was afraid the loft was going to be too high. I was going to clip that tree.
So you went 3 wood or something.
I went back to all my YouTube clips and I'm like, okay, I got to finish low. And the ball was above my feet, so it was going to naturally draw because the straight line would have put me on the right edge of the green near the water.
Yeah.
Right.
Yeah.
Too dangerous. And so,
but I said, the lie is such that it should draw naturally. And so I took a choke up 5 wood.
5 wood.
And keep it low. And I finished low. And I went a little bit too long. I went right at the pin, went over the pin, rolled onto the fringe. Nice. But from where I was,
not bad.
That was a freaking miracle.
For anybody that doesn't know that hole, it's do you remember that hole?
Yeah,
that's a hard shot from the fairway.
It's a very, very hard shot.
It's tough. It's intimidating.
It's a challenging shot from the fairway. Yeah, like a heart and your heart and yeah.
And so I think the fact that it impressed Scott, it sort of inspired me.
So you had great.
So you had positive imaging.
Yeah,
plus you had some nicotine coming in.
The cigar was lit.
Awesome.
Cigar was lit with basically your favorite people.
Was there was there any beer involved? A little day, not on the walking round.
No,
I
didn't. No beer that day.
Yeah, okay. Hard to carry.
So I didn't hit the beer button.
Okay.
By the way, the unicorn button is on the development plan for Grint.
Yeah.
I've already submitted it. And then the wind was blowing pretty hard right at our face. Pin measured 200 yards is on the center left.
So we would say it was adding a club and a half, maybe 2 clubs.
That's what we were thinking.
Yeah.
And I'm not a long hitter anymore, so I thought I'd choke up on a driver because I actually learned how to do that. I learned how to. We were playing off the blues, and it was at the 6 club challenge where I took only 4 clubs, one of them being a driver. I learned how to be really flexible with my driver because there were some like 200 yard holes.
Tell you, the 6 club challenge keeps coming back.
Yeah.
When it comes to clutch shots,
it is. And I learned how to hit driver off the deck a few times. I think I did that 4 times during the 6 club challenge.
Oh, right.
And then the choke up driver was the other shot I learned. And so I was like, I'm going to do a choke up driver. And I heard afterwards, Scott turned to Kent and goes,
"That's
he's taking
insane.
A driver. Imagine if he holds this," was what he said to Kent.
Did he really say that?
He did really say that. And then I hit the shot and it was just dead straight. I mean, right at the pin. And it was low and cutting, you know, it was just straight at the pin. And Kent immediately shouts Okinawa,
right? As you always do, right?
Sinawa,
as you always do.
It looked like local rules. Local rules.
Uh-huh. And Scott and I was as it was in the air, I was thinking, man, I wish this was during the jolly.
Yeah, exactly.
Worth
what I
5 million yen.
Yeah.
So it's actually one of those rare hole in ones that it looked like it was going or could have had a chance to go in anyway. Because a lot of them you hear about, they have miss hits.
Right.
And
so it's a perfect shot. This was right at it. And it was hit well. And I actually thought I overshot the pin. And my eyesight is so bad. Once it got to about 185 yards, it disappeared.
Yeah.
I couldn't see it anymore. But Kent saw it and Scott saw it. It landed. And Kent said it took 2 bounces and rolled up and went bloop. Right in the cup.
Oh, and my eyedropper. God, perfect.
Eyedropper.
It's just a perfect hole in one.
And they started screaming. They were jumping up and down, and I was like, no. I thought they were pulling my leg.
Oh, you thought they were winding you up?
Because I couldn't see it. I thought they were just pulling my leg. And then they're like, no, really. It went in. And Scott's like, it went in. And I said, really? He's like, really? And so we started taking pictures, and then I started getting on the phone. I started to text my wife.
Yeah.
And then they're like, maybe you should go check first. I'm like, you're kidding me. You're like, you're pulling my leg, right? And they're like, no, no, I definitely would it, but just go check first.
I think it's awesome that you texted Melania before you texted anyone else. I thought you'd have texted your brother, but yeah.
No,
I
mean, it's to tell my wife.
That's fantastic.
Fantastic.
So, yeah, and then we drove down. And
But then how did it feel after? Because we saw this Holmes thing recently, and he was obviously devastated and not very happy when his hole-in-one went in because he was worried. Now, of course, we now have two groups going to Vegas.
Yeah, absolutely. Oh, I couldn't believe it. It was so surreal. And then it was so just uplifting personally to see everybody. Later at Cubanos and have everyone come up and they all said the same thing. Congratulations, high five. And with a driver.
Exactly. That's
because I think that's a different thing.
That is special. Yeah.
It is.
Yeah,
it's different. Yeah.
It was just cool to see the joy everyone had. It was very authentic.
For sure.
And genuine. And it just
everyone's super stoked.
Yeah. Really cool. Yeah, I'm very grateful for everybody's support.
That's two we've
and
had
so
this,
we're not
going to
start
summer.
Talking about the odds of this because obviously it's getting ridiculous. I know Scott Strange told me at that barbecue, he's like, his experience is it tends to go in sort of waves.
Yeah.
He wouldn't threes. Surprise him if there was another one or two this summer.
Yeah, there definitely will be, yeah.
Mm. But the odds would suggest, I guess, differently, although Michael and I discussed this, I guess the odds don't change. Yep. They're the same every time. So maybe it's not that unlikely.
That's cool. Fantastic. Great story.
Great to see Holmes in one. We got to get Holmes on at some point too. We haven't actually
talked him through was, yet. You know, it was the first one Kent had ever seen. He's never had one.
That's what he said to me afterwards. Yeah.
Right.
Mac hadn't either.
And he's seen a lot of golf. Both of them have seen a lot of golf, right?
Yeah. I've only seen one.
I've seen three amateur ones, and I've seen one on that hole.
Oh, really?
And the same experience. It was a guy called Yamamoto-san that used to own Pension Log years ago.
All right.
Off the same tee box. And he three wood downwind. Same thing. Three guys couldn't see. I was the only person that could see it. Nobody believed me.
Right.
He's gone in.
Yeah. It's kind of an amazing thing.
It is amazing. It's very, to see very it. Special. It is surreal to see. I saw Russ.
You
hit
said,
one.
Yeah.
That's the one time I saw it. And it was straight at it, bounce in. You're like, did that happen?
Yeah, when I was present at home, really none of us saw it. As I told you, we were just blindsided by the bunker. So.
We do have a question from fan of the show, F19. And his name might sound like a jet. But he wants to know if Michael's found a private jet that can bring us all to Vegas.
Oh, yeah, because there was a discussion on the chat about how we're all going to get there.
It's not a problem. We just had to front $5 million.
Yeah. No, from here to Vegas. Money. No, I reckon here to Vegas one way, $500,000.
Oh, no. I'm saying front for gambling.
Oh.
Then they'll send it for free.
I'm thinking about just paying for the PJ.
I love the way you think.
PJ, they'll just be about $500,000.
About $500,000, yeah. I reckon, yeah.
NetJets.
But we could get 12 of us in there.
Yeah,
so it's only about 50 grand a piece.
50 or 5 million each.
5 million a piece.
I love that, for the PJ.
Yeah. But just one way.
We're going to take the PJ.
And then we're going to come back economy.
If we can even afford that,
we'll never come back.
We'll either buy a jet to come back or we won't be able to come back.
Yeah, we'll be in a boat.
No, it's a lovely idea. I think I do suspect. Actually, the problem is we've also got to go to Scotland next year as well. But anyway, we'll figure that out later.
Marvelous.
Yeah, so hole in one. So actually, we just wanted to segue back to some people listening may not will have probably heard of the Jolly Fox that we've had locally here, but may not appreciate just how it came about and what inspired you to set that tournament up. Just thought it might be interesting just for people to hear about that a little bit.
Sure. So, you know, most of the golf I've played in life has been just casual weekend rounds. You know, I really didn't play any competitions because I didn't belong to a club or live somewhere where I belonged to a club for a long time. And so most of my golf was just casual golf. And then I got invited to this tournament in southern China at the oldest golf course in China at a tournament called the Jolly Buffalo. And it was started by a bunch of expat American softball players who started this in, I think, 1992, 1993. And you know, the only competitions I'd done before were, you know, sort of double Prioria, so a lot, sort of bunch of sort of bullshit competitions that didn't feel like a real competition. And I played this Jolly Buffalo, and I couldn't believe the format. It was so competitive, and it felt like a fantasy golf tournament. I felt like a pro. And there was so much real tension, so much competitive spirit. This is the greatest thing in the world. And this tournament in China went on for 25 years. And, you know, as you know, expats in Asia, they come over, you know, with a company, with a bank or whatever, and they
sort of five year cycles,
and they leave. And all these mates would come back every year. They'd move back to the States. They still put it on the calendars. They come back every year because it was so much fun.
Oh, even though they're repatriated, came back.
They
fly back in over to China. They had it on the calendars, and I actually organized the 25th reunion. That's the 25th year, which was the last year they had it. I did that organization, chaired that event, and I was going for a three-peat. My partner and I had won 2 years in a row.
You won the Jolly Buffalo.
Yeah, 2 years.
See, this is something I missed.
That was the first repeat. My partner and I were the first repeat winners in the 23-year history at that point.
A whole bunch of questions. Sorry to interrupt. Please remember your thought. Did you bet on your own team the first year?
Oh, you always got to bet on your own team.
Sorry, did you at least own half of it?
Yeah, of course.
Okay.
Did you
own more than half of it?
My partner was quite a good golfer. He's a 4 handicap.
Uh-huh.
And not only was he a 4 handicap, he had the most incredible demeanor one could have as a partner. He was always super positive
and lovely. And
he loved to talk about the game of golf, and he loved sharing strategy, but always in a friendly, supportive way. He never got stressed. You know, you hit a bad shot, you know, didn't bother him.
Perfect.
And so he was a great partner. And the guys who knew him, because he'd been around almost since the beginning of the tournament, as soon as we got mashed up, they're like, you got the best partner.
Nice.
And everyone put money on us because of him.
And so the second one, presumably you were almost unbackable. It was like you were massive favorites, were you, or not?
We got a lot of money.
Yeah. Okay.
Yeah. We got a lot of action on us.
Yeah, I can imagine. Cool.
And then the third one, the 25th, I organized it, but I couldn't make it. I had to cancel at the last minute. And so I was not able to defend, but they let my brother step in representing me to play for me.
Don't tell me he won.
No.
Right. Okay. So there is some reality in this.
So anyways, the format was amazing. And what that spawned, the original Jolly Buffalo actually spawned sister tournaments around the world. And for a long time, for about a 15-year period, they called it the four majors. There was the Jolly Elephant in Thailand, the Jolly Beaver in Vancouver, and the Hairy Crab in Shanghai.
Mm.
And there was a special award for anyone who played all four, who went around and played all four tournaments. And it's the Buffalo's been retired, but you know, the format was so fun. I mean, just really fun. And during COVID, I was playing golf with Patrick Otani and Ken Sauer, and I was just telling them about the tournament. I said, you know, I'd love to do something like this here just for fun.
Mm.
And I was like, I don't know any golfers here. Do you think there's enough people that would be interested? And I said, look, we'll do a mini version, just the four of us. I think Ali Shelley was part of it.
Yeah.
And so
the four of us. You had the shirts made, didn't you? I know I seen him wear that shirt.
Oh, that was from the last Jolly Buffalo.
Oh.
I had extra shirts. I gave him one. Okay. So we decided to do it. We literally had a 3-round, just the four of us, just so they could get a feel, because I wanted their feedback. Like, do you think this would fly? And they said, oh, this is great. You definitely have to do it. And I sort of forgot about it. Like, we played it, and then like 3 weeks later they asked me again, so you gonna organize this? I said, you guys are serious. I was like,
and this was last year, was it?
Yeah, it's last year.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Wow.
Yeah.
And then so literally pulled the kid of the first tournament in like 10 days.
Yeah.
And we just pulled it off, and it was just cool to see the reaction, the smiles on people's faces, the renewed friendships or the deepened friendships, and you know, people who knew each other but hadn't talked to each other. Like, all these unintended consequences occurred, which were magical, really.
Yeah,
and,
yeah.
And I thought, great, you know, let's make it a tradition. Let's do it again. And
so
again.
To be clear, the Jolly Fox is the only tournament of its kind with that name, right? They all it have is. A different name. Jolly is the only common thing. In fact, in one case, Hairy Crab, they don't even have the name
correct.
Jolly.
Right? Correct. And so, I mean, you know, imitation is the sincerest form of flattery. I just really ripped off the event. you know, we organized something different around the trappings. You know, you get different prizes, different swag, et cetera. But, yeah, so it turned out okay. And it's been, people seem to be pretty happy with it, and we'll keep it going and hope you have a lot of fun.
Oh, we got one of your kids maybe needing a bit of attention. That's awesome, Michael. Thank you.
Yeah, thanks, man. That's awesome. That's really cool. Thanks for coming on, Michael.
So Michael's shooting off because the kids are calling, which is fair enough.
It's all good. We were going to do a little cheeky deep dive on Michael. Is that still?
We can still do a little deep dive.
If he can return.
He can return.
I think he's.
Well, he can just bring her over. Yeah.
Oh, here we go. I think she's feeling a bit lonely.
Yeah, so John, talk Michael through what we do with the deep dive. I'm sure he's listened to the old podcast here or there, but
So Michael, we thought we'd do a deep dive, which is we go into
scary.
Yeah.
This is scary.
It's quite fascinating as well.
Do you ever look at your trophy room on Grin?
Just
every 2 hours, only every other day.
All right, so you're not allowed to answer. So I ask some questions, and the boys. Yeah. And the boy, one of them will come up in turn with an answer, and the other guy goes,
and then you can have a guess.
Ian
as
is
well.
Rummaging around.
So I've been rummaging around in the trophy cupboard.
In the trophy cupboard.
Okay. It's always a bit uncomfortable when Ian rummages around.
I would just like to say that, you know, I'm just looking down, and the great highlight, having done a few deep dives and spent a lot of time on the trophy room, is. You don't see a lot of holes in one.
No, you don't.
You don't see a little
correct.
Purple.
Correct. I haven't even looked at that.
Yeah. I think it's purple. I think it's purple or it's like
purple.
A really different
really
color.
It's
yeah.
Purple. Yeah.
Extraordinary. Yeah.
So, we're gonna kick off with the. I messed this up last time, so I'll start properly this time. Number of rounds posted on Grint. Ben, how many?
For Michael, well. So he introduced us to Grint. I assume he was on it before. I'm going for... Oh, he wasn't? Okay, so I'm going for 135.
135 over under.
I reckon it's higher.
121.
Oh, nice guess.
All right, so that's just to give you a basis of
121
what,
rounds, pretty good.
Okay.
That's to give you a basis of what we...
So now we can use our maths.
Now you can use your maths. So overall scoring records, best score... Today over par.
In the grint, obviously.
Is this me? Or are you going to have a go?
Sorry, no, it's John. Ben did the last one. John.
80.
Yeah, I want to say that Michael shot an 80, so I'm going to have to go 81.
80. Very good.
Yeah.
That's right. I somehow remember you saying you had it on for 79. And
I actually know everyone's stats.
Okay. My best run on Grint was overshadowed that day by Russ's 76.
I know.
In my group.
That was the one where you said there's some special sauce in that group.
Yeah.
Remember when you asked?
That's right. Because we had Russ on the show after that.
Okay. So composite score, front nine, back nine, best scores combined.
Oh, what would be his best score? And it's me to throw first. Gosh, I think I'm going to go 77.
I go lower.
76. Front nine, 39. Back nine, 37. A back nine, 37.
Yeah, that's pretty cool.
That's pretty cool.
And in fact, if that's a village, that back nine, that could be par.
Is at... Rusutsu.
Okay.
On the 12th of September last year.
Okay.
Oh, was that a Ryder Cup day?
I think it might have been.
I think it was a Ryder Cup day.
Oh, there you go.
There we go.
Yeah. He was hit the heights when the competitive.
When the
juice is flowing. When there's a bit of money on it.
Okay. There's some good stats. Sorry, I'm a little bit excited.
Getting a bit overexcited.
Best lowest number of putts in one round.
It's you first, Sean.
Michael's not allowed to say because he knows.
But Michael can have a little guess at
no,
some
he
point.
Knows. He's not
no, but
say,
after yeah. John and I.
28.
Yeah, I'm going 29.
Do you know Michael?
This is 29.
24.
Oh, really?
No way.
When was that?
24.
Gimme City.
Extraordinary.
Hanazono on the 14th of August in 2020.
Oh, wow.
Isn't that's a year.
Do you think there might have been the odd gimme year in there?
The year anniversary just passed.
Sorry.
There's a lot of one putts.
Noticeable no comment on the gimme question.
It looks like legit stats.
Skipped over that one.
Okay. Most number of pars in one round. Sorry, this is John to throw first.
Yeah,
I'm going 12.
11.
Oh.
Most number of birdies in one round.
Oh, I think that's easier. I think it's got to be 3.
Yeah, that's what I would have said. Go lower.
3.
Oh, I would have said 3.
The great thing about Mike's stats is you know they're going to be perfect. So this,
yeah.
This is good.
No, he's good at it.
Most number of eagles in one round.
John, it's you first. It's either 0 or 1.
Oh, 1.
0.
1.
Hole in one.
Oh, no.
That's what I said. I thought, probably not on par 5s. And I thought, oh, yeah, hole in one. So
okay.
Hello. McFly.
Sorry, Michael, you got to check. If you know the answer, throw your hand in the air and let me know what's going on. This is a great stat. Most number of one putts in one round.
Oh, it's
who is it first? Is it
it's
JB?
Quite good.
It's you.
It's me first. Number one parts. I'm going to go. I'm going to go 7.
Higher. 10.
9.
There we go.
Yeah, there nice one, JB.
I've seen him putt. I can believe
that. Yeah, no. When he. Yeah.
Okay.
Exactly.
Yeah. And based on that, what's the most number of par saves in one round?
Ooh. JB first.
Nine.
Par saves 9. I'm going 6.
7.
Oh. Okay. Got to be average sight in there, JB.
Fantastic. That's really cool.
This is an amazing deep dive. This might be the best deep dive.
We can see some stories.
I dropped my calculator.
Clearly, yeah. Michael can putt. So, next one, we've got 120 runs around posted. How many birdies in those 121 rounds?
Okay, so I'm going to estimate that Michael is about 0.8 per. So I'm going for 104.
120 rounds?
120 rounds, 104 birdies.
Lower. Way lower.
30 birdies.
Yeah.
Oh, wow.
How many back-to-back birdies?
One.
I think what we're learning here is that if Michael gets on the green in regulation, he's shooting 7 under every day.
the putting is good.
I'm told the key to shooting the 70s is 50% fairways, 50% greens, and 32 putts or less, and you're shooting the 70s.
There we go.
Sounds about right.
Absolutely, absolutely. Isn't it? Okay, so we've pretty much got all of that stuff. We're going to have a quick look at the streaks.
Oh, so yeah, we like the streaks, don't we? Yeah.
Give me a second here. I'm using Damo's computer, so.
So is anything of that you've heard thus far, Michael, surprising, or were you quite aware of that stuff? The 24 putts you knew, I
24
guess.
Putts was a surprise. I feel like my putting has been getting, even though it was a year ago, but I feel like recently my putting has been getting a lot better.
Better, yeah. Huh? Mm.
When I played with the F19 last week at the Kaito Classic, literally if I didn't putt so well, I would have shot 120.
You have to putt well there. That's a few. Yeah. Yeah, that's true. That's good training there.
But everyone had reasonably good rounds. The F19 shot 86. What did you shoot?
I didn't have a good score, but I would have had a very bad score had I not putted so
well. Had you not putted so well, exactly.
Okay, so we've...
How about that par 9 at Hokkaido Classic? Mm. the one with the raised green, the bunker in front.
Which appears to be about and that 2 foot deep.
Naughty little tree on the right, about 150 yards out,
that
somehow comes into play almost every time.
Yeah. Very challenging second. That second shot's very challenging in that.
It's
so tight.
Yeah, so shallow.
It's a shallow green, and you've got to listen to the caddy. Brian said he listened to the caddy and made par, which is good.
So, guys, we're here. Streaks. So we're going for a couple of different things. Great thing about Michael, obviously. Sorry, voice wavered there. The great thing about Michael is we know that his stats are accurate. Double bogey free holes
in a row. I think it's you first, JB.
How many
holes he had in a row
without a double bogey?
I've got a pretty out there.
Nine.
That's pretty harsh. I wasn't going to go quite that harsh, mate.
I don't think I've had that.
So
many.
Now I can easily go 15.
Hang on, so this is holes, not rounds.
Yeah, holes. But John has been rather disrespectful and said nine. I've gone 15.
Okay. 3.6.
No, that's the average.
Yeah, that's what I asked for, the average. What was
the number of holes he's gone. Oh, the average number of holes?
Average. What's the average?
Yeah, but that's not so fun. What we want is the actual number of holes he's gone.
Oh, the highest streak.
Yes. Yeah,
yeah. Highest streak, yeah.
And you said
15.
Michael, do you know what it is?
I have no idea. I would take the under from the...
Okay. No. From the... Massive
buyer.
The 2nd of July 2021 through to the 8th of July 2021. This is including somewhere called Indian Ridge.
I'm sure it's way more than 15. Yeah,
21 holes without a double bogey.
Yeah.
Okay, three putt free, most number of holes.
Okay, so it's me first. This time I'm not going quite so low as
we've talked
John
about the putting.
Did.
We've talked about the putting. We know we can putt.
I'm going... So. Actually, I'll go 15 again.
I'll go lower than that.
Lower?
So you're talking about the highest streak, right? Highest streak
highest
number
streak,
of holes
not the
without,
average.
Without a three-putt.
Yeah, 15 for me. John's 15. Gone 14.
Okay, the average is 14.6.
Wow.
Ooh, bring us to the number.
It's impressive.
Tasty.
So
I'm going to have to go, well, you, average you sort 14. Of, you immediately, yeah, you got to go one and a half, right?
Yeah,
so
you
got
to go 20
25 something. Or something.
Okay, so between, you've been putting like a legend this year, by the way, between the 10th of July at the Renaissance Golf Club Maroon Tee, to the 16th of July this year, 93 holes without a three putt.
Wow.
Good Lord. That is a stat to die for. Congratulations,
93.
Mate.
That's
well
phenomenal.
Done.
Yeah.
Very good.
It could be a user error there.
no, but you could have been putting off the, you know, in the fringe and stuff like that.
I can see a pattern, though. I can see that there's a large chunk of time here. We're talking about the last 20 rounds at the moment, but in America, as soon as he's come to Japan, the average has plummeted.
Right.
Absolutely plummeted.
And why is that? Because of the stiff rules.
Probably better
that we
greens,
have.
Right?
Yeah.
Playing on some really,
greens.
Really nice greens.
True.
Yeah, fast.
True.
Fast.
Oh,
smooth.
That's
greens.
True.
The greens
faster,
are amazing.
Smoother.
Yeah.
The course they play, the greens are amazing.
Okay.
That is true.
Good stuff. So that's the deep dive.
That's amazing. What a great deep dive.
Superb.
That's one of the more
interesting
ones.
Yeah. So
say.
You could be so
like,
in
holy
terms
shit,
of
Michael
putting,
put.
You must be.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I think that might be the name of the podcast.
Who are the best?
We can't use the shit word.
Does it tell
word?
You who are the best putters? Because Michael, I suspect, might get into that top. Whoever is there, some kind of ranking that ranks
I think
us
the
all
name
all
of this
on
podcast.
There is
the
a ranking.
This,
yes.
Name of this podcast is Boy Michael.
Wow. Boy Michael can putt. That's right. We should try not to use Ding Dong Battle again.
No. Can be never used again.
I'm doing a deep dive on the stats, and there is very, very little purple here on the putting. It's very impressive.
And that's a good thing, is it?
Yeah.
Right. Mm. Cool.
Interesting.
How do you feel about that, Michael?
I am tickled pink.
Humbled.
Yes.
Tickled purple.
Tickled purple.
Actually, that could be the name as well.
Thank you very much.
Very good. Michael, it's been great pleasure. You're welcome to stay. We've just got a few more regular sections to cover. You're more than welcome to stay and pass a comment. I can see you've got some challenges.
Feed my children.
That's all right. Understandable.
I'm grateful for the opportunity.
Hey, dude, thanks so much for coming in, man.
Thanks for coming on.
It's been a real pleasure.
This will not be the last time.
I will not forget that hole-in-one story is epic with the driver. Never forget that.
Yeah. Choked down driver. Well done, Michael. Thank you.
Okay, we proceed to rounds of the week, which I think we agree just sort of to genuinely review the walking rounds from last week. And both you guys in the studio here had rather excellent.
Ian had a pretty tasty 73.
Ian's very tasty, yeah. Very, very stable, super
which
good.
Which is one over, 73. Right?
Yeah, one over the white tees. So, yeah, one over. And then,
Good.
You always know someone's playing well. So he's playing well, then he hits it sort of in the trees on the ninth. And I'm like, oh, may take a bogey. He chips it out, hits it to about a foot, taps par.
Yeah.
You know, like, okay.
Sometimes you just flow.
You're like,
right?
Okay, that's kind of like, you know, you're bulletproof, which is quite nice. Yeah. And yourself, Ben.
We were looking
at Grint all day long. We're like, Ben Harding is on fire.
I sneaked in a 79 off the Blues. The reason the Grint went on fire is I think I was two over after 11 or 12. It was pretty exciting. I mean, the funny thing is I think I wasn't really thinking about my golf. I was more interested in watching Ashley and Brian. And God bless those guys. I had plenty of time to think about my shots. Because there was some spraying going on from the boys.
Were you assisting with that side of things?
Absolutely, yeah. So it was, but just to reiterate, you know, playing with those guys, and of course Owain, Ian's great friend from back in the day. You know, you can't imagine a more relaxed group. So everyone was very happy. Everyone was pretty chilled. And
I'd be curious to hear how Owain played, because I played with him the past couple of times.
He played well.
Good grief, he's hitting it great.
He's a danger man.
He's hitting it really, really good.
So he shot net 75, which is pretty good, I would say he hit it way better than that. So he had a couple of blowout holes. Otherwise, he would have been going low. And as you say, Ian, he's starting to show signs of his former promise, or, you know, his back in the day kind of abilities. And it will not surprise me, actually, we played with Bevan today, not dissimilar to Bevan, to see these guys in single figures pretty soon, I'd say.
Owain actually just was sporting a new set of Harris tweed head covers which I thought was the quintessential
that is old school.
I just love the fact that a Welshman is going for the Harris tweed, right? Yeah. Coming in theory.
It's respectful.
It's respectful to the proper English cloth.
Keep your clubs warm. You need Harris Island.
Keep nice and warm.
And I think he's also bought you one, hasn't he, Ian?
He bought me a little tartan jacket.
Oh, the Mackenzie clan.
And that's which clan is that? The loud clan, the quiet clan. You said there's a few different versions of the Mackenzie clan.
No, there's a different version of the tartan,
but the
main clan was obviously the McDonald's.
Okay,
they were the son of the mighty ones, and the Mackenzies were the northern. Well, the McDonald's and the Mackenzies were up north, and then anything kind of below sort of. Perth, really?
It's almost England.
It's England, basically.
But seriously, I thought it was quite interesting. You said there are different versions of the Mackenzie clan. So you said there's the formal...
There's modern, classic, dress, working, and ancient.
Right.
So you get the four different.
And the
tartans.
One you've so got is what
is
the modern
just
one.
Just the modern one. That's all. Right. Interestingly, is the most popular one that you see on any kind of movie that involves a tartan check.
Okay. So Braveheart. What did they use in Braveheart?
Well, they used the old working style. They're all brown because that's the only. There was no dye. Right?
Oh, interesting. So, yeah. Okay.
Right.
So that's why it changes.
Right.
Nice. So if you're playing golf with Owain, check out his Harris Tweed head covers.
And suffice to say, his head is always going to be warm.
Nice and warm. Right. It is amazing what you learn on this podcast, I've got to tell you.
It's extraordinary.
Extraordinary. The stuff we bring. Very good. So great rounds of the week. Obviously, we're on the lookout for great rounds being played this week. It's only Monday, so plenty of time. We move to top tip. So we did have the high handicap sit. We've moved to sort of generally top tips. It's hard to keep coming up with absolute diamonds, but we were talking before the show, and I think what you were mentioning, Ben, is a very valid sort of, it's along the being inspired and sort of ensure that you remain in love with the game and develop some knowledge of its history and stuff. So you said you Googled, what did you Google? Tiger Woods.
Oh, yeah, that's right. Sorry, yeah. I had a complete blank there, Jibby. I apologize. I was getting excited about Tartan.
You're still thinking about Tartan.
Well, to be honest with you, I wanted to watch a bit of golf. And it's surprising given the PGA's proprietorial sort of approach to this stuff and indeed many other tours, how difficult it is to actually watch any decent golf if you don't pay for it.
Yeah.
And frankly, even if you do pay for it, because often it says, well, you're not in America, so you can't subscribe. So I just thought, well, what do I want to see? Maybe I just want to watch the greatest golfer ever play loads of golf shots. So I Googled Tiger Woods montage, and the first thing that popped up was this, I think, 16 or 20-minute YouTube video. I think they said the dates were from 1999. He was playing then, right? To 2017, 2018. Any of our listeners and any of our crew that just want to get blown away by golf, that is a highly, highly recommended watch. Mm. Of course, there's just some normal, you know, drives, woods, etc., off the tees. But for me, the most fascinating part of it was when he's playing out of tough lies, tough positions, bunkers 200 yards out, you know, under trees. I mean, basically just impossible shots. Mm. And it is truly inspiring. You know, it makes you think about stuff, for sure. Not that one can emulate the great one, but my God, yeah.
So, okay, so tip of the week is watch lots of YouTube videos? Is it?
Well, no, it's watch that one.
Okay, good.
It's particularly watch that. Well, you might as well watch the best guy of all
that's
time.
That's a good starting point, because we definitely see, and I'm sure everybody does it, but when you're learning the fundamentals of golf, you don't want to be in a situation when you're just sort of ping-ponging around, you know, different YouTube videos and seeing a tip and go, oh, I'll try that. You need to have basic fundamentals. But there are some really good videos and some really good tips from various people online talking about, like, you know, how to play golf.
Well, I don't know if I mentioned it before. I might have done. But my absolute go-to, you mentioned tips, page, again, freely accessible and bucket loads of great stuff, is Greg Norman. Go to Greg Norman's homepage and click on the bit where it says golf tips. And he has got everything. And he's got his tips for driver, tips for bunkers, tips for, and you know, all of them got nice little pictures. He's relatively non-patronizing in the way he describes it. So it's every time. So for me, before any tournament, including our little tournaments, that we, you know, apart from the big tournaments that I play elsewhere, before any tournament, that's where I personally go. And if I'm worried about my bunker play, I go and check out what he said, or putting, or whatever. Really, really good. Free, completely free.
But John, any videos that you follow or watch that you enjoy that you think are really good?
I mean, I must say, I don't follow too much on the instructional side, because I can fall into the trap of watching too many different interpretations of the swing, and that you should do this, and that guy says you should do whatever. I did read the class when I was sort of more old school, I guess. I came from Jack Nicklaus, Golf My Way, Hale Irwin. I also read the Greg Norman books. in the early days. And then I guess I'm like you, I tend to watch more, I watch golf, some of the famous stuff. And I think some of the, it's great to go back and watch, like actually you bring up Greg Norman. I somehow caught, was it 90 recently with the Open, one of the great rounds. I remember watching it, seeing in my house at home. I think it's at St. George's, and Norman hit 64 in the last round. One of the best, just,
he was just the master of the low last round.
Unbelievable. I mean, he's, it's so good all day. And Langer, and he's playing head to head with Langer on that day. And Langer apparently is walking up the 18th and just said, "That's the best golf I've ever seen in my life. You deserve to win."
That's awesome.
And so I like to watch that, kind of, it inspires me. And I love to know, I think for people to know about the game of golf and to know about the great shots and the great personalities, I think it somehow enhances your love of the game and your desire to stay with it. I know it has for me. That's partly why I love golf so much. It's the history and the stuff that happens and the great moments and the great personalities.
We're encouraged to think of golf as what happens, you know, when you hit a ball off the fairway and you've got a certain distance, right? But the reality for, frankly, most of us is that most of the time we're not hitting off the fairway, and most of the time there may be an impediment between us and the hole, right? Sorry. A lot of the time. Times when you otherwise have absolutely no idea what to do. And so if you've watched a few of those things, Seve presumably would have been amazing. People like Sandy Lyle hitting that 7-iron out of a bunker to was that the Masters or the Open?
Masters.
Last hole.
Yeah, exactly. That kind of stuff. That's inspirational stuff. Yeah.
Actually, basically, because I know Ian, you've got some great like on the more instructional side specifically. But actually, I reckon that's a good section on the podcast, is to sort of bring up like our top 10 your sort of recommendations around videos, instruction. Mm. And yeah, you sort of choose.
What do you do when you're looking for inspiration, Ian? Apart from talking to pros or...
No, when it comes to videos and stuff, I mean, we're talking about the tip, like good tips, of the week. This is a very important announcement for our listeners. Immediately go to the Padre Harrington golf tips. I don't know if you guys have seen those.
Exactly. No,
they,
I haven't.
They are fantastic.
Are they?
The way that he explains stuff is it's incredibly funny. It's really easy to understand. And I just remember this classic line. I can't do the accent. It's like he basically says, "If your grip is a little bit like this over the top, then you will have a terrible, terrible swing." he's not trying to sugarcoat it. He's just like, "Don't put your hand there. This is where it needs to sit." Nice. We're looking at Damien to see if that accent was all right. That was Patrick, who just lived in India for a while.
No, I think we enjoyed that accent. That was good.
The accent's been good. I know.
But the point is, he's got 6 or 7 videos out at the moment. He does a couple when he's on tour, and they are brilliant. They are absolutely mint. They're so
good. I need to look those up. Yeah, that's good. Yeah.
And he does a short game. He does grip. He does like basics. I don't know if you know this, but he has basically a golf course around his house, and he has to hit chip shots over his house onto the...
Oh, is that right?
I didn't know that.
Yeah, so he everything's around his house.
That's pretty cool.
It's very, very interesting.
And Damo, have you got any... What do you do when you're looking for inspiration, mate?
I go straight to What a Player.
What a Player?
What do you call him? Golf Sidekick, the South African dude.
Oh, okay.
Oh, he's the guy.
He's been on his show. Yeah.
What does he do?
Hit to Texas. Is he the guy who says hit?
Aim for Texas.
He plants feathers and grows birdies.
Oh, is that right? That guy. Okay. And how many birdies did you get yesterday?
0.
Okay. So you didn't plant any birdies then, or?
No, Benji found the feathers and planted them all.
Oh, so they're left around the course, are they?
Yeah.
Okay. But in all seriousness, is that where you look? Or you just look there for amusement?
Well, it's quite entertaining, but he talks about course management. So for people trying to break 100, break 90, or break 80, he gives some great tips. Mm. So check it out.
Perfect.
Well, the other one I've looked at over the years is Mizuno did a series with Luke Donald, short game series, where he takes you through like every kind of shot he hits, because he was the acknowledged master of
win.
Yeah, Luke. He's number one in the world, and the reason he's number, he doesn't hit it far and whatever, but his short game was phenomenal.
His short game was on fire.
And he used to
time.
Like wear patches in the side of greens, like where he practices so much apparently. And so he wow. There's a good set of videos there from Mizuno that tells you all the little, and it tells you some quite subtle stuff too that you wouldn't normally get, hitting it into banks, using spin, opening the face, all that kind of stuff. There's a whole bunch of stuff that quite interesting.
Yeah. And then something I came across this morning, probably about 5:30 this morning, Golf Tragic, obviously. But bizarrely, I don't know how Google had figured this out, but it suggested to me that I should look at this video of angry golfers. I must say, it's pretty funny.
Are we talking some club throwing?
We're looking at professionals
driving carts
it.
Into lakes and stuff like this.
Just looking at. I mean, it's extraordinary how many clubs get thrown on the professional tour into the water.
Oh, it's all they're all pros, are they?
This particular one I watched was all pros.
Professional,
just
angry
losing
golfers.
On PGA predominantly.
Really?
Just losing it badly. Everyone from Daly all the way through to present day. Sergio, post-Masters win.
Oh, I remember seeing
about think
this.
I think he was over in Dubai. He ruined five greens in a row.
Oh, you remember this.
By smacking, he was just smacking his putter down into the green and just gouging horrible holes out of them. So impetuous. Very, very funny. Extraordinary stuff. Yeah. So
that's good. So if you ever feel you're badly behaved on the golf course, you should probably go and look at those, and you won't feel as bad
Sergio
about it.
And
you won't
suddenly
feel
you're like
you
a
feel
saint,
like yeah, you won't feel as bad about it.
You're
yourself.
A saint. Yeah.
Superb. Top tips. Back next week. Tick off. We are just going to pause on the equipment side of things, and I know we just said we did a little section on the Mazda brand, which I know yourself and Ian are keen proponents of. So you've got the putter, right?
So I've got the wedges. Putter. This is something that I've only seen for sale in the Rusutsu outlets. Izumikawa was where I bought my putter.
I remember seeing them there.
But they have them, of course, at Tower in the shop there. There's something, you've lived in Japan for a long time, you appreciate the artisan, nature of your Japanese person that spends sort of 10 or 20 years perfecting something and then finally comes out with a single product, be it a ramen, be it katsukare, or be it a putter. And in this case, this dude decided, Mr.
Mazda-san,
decided to make, I don't know if he made putters first or wedges first, but Ian put me onto it. He's like, why don't you demo one of these putters? Actually, I never even knew you could demo stuff, actually, to be honest with you.
Yeah, have become good at that. I noticed they've got a few things in their bag.
They're doing a pretty good job. And I grabbed this putter, took it out for a round. It's a blade putter. It looked not dissimilar to the Scotty Cameron that I was rocking, but for some reason the weight was nice. I kind of like shiny things anyway, and it had a really shiny underneath. And so I bought it, and frankly, I've rocked it ever since. And Ian may have something more to say about the wedges. What's the story with the wedges they've got?
Yeah, the Mazda is I think the grandfather of all. I don't know if you've mentioned Miura-san, obviously.
No, I thought you would probably know. I don't know. Yeah, so I don't know the background.
Well, Miura is the grandfather of the handmade steel, perfectly forged blades. When Tiger was in his prime with his Nike blades, they were actually made by Miura.
Ah,
and they were made by Miura, and they were stamped with
Nike,
with the Nike badge. And one of Miura's deshi, one of his
apprentices
created Mazda Golf, and they make a series of really really cool putters, all with a special. So it's actually, in Japanese, it's called Nantetsu, which is soft steel, basically. Mm. So it dinks really easy. You got to look after it and stick it in a case and make sure it doesn't, get knocked about, but you get this lovely, lovely response in your hands, whether it's a putter or a wedge. So we both have a Mazda putter.
Mm.
And I've used Mazda wedges now for two or three years, and they're phenomenal. They're really forgiving, really soft, really really responsive.
Yeah. And the retail their channel is only, I guess they've got an online channel, and then so they got a few.
They have an online channel, but it's always sold out.
It's always really
so. Yeah. It's all very much sort of order made kind of stuff.
Okay.
So I've got a 52 and a 58. I think they've got four putters, that's six or seven different wedges. I've got a 52, 58, and they're just AWA wedge and SWS wedge.
That's right. Dude, yeah. For sure the best way to do with those is go to one of the Risutsu courses and just try them.
Yeah, they've got
and the, if you happen to you like can
try
it,
them, yeah. So just basically walk in and say, I want to try that. And but be careful because you'll leave one and use them.
Mine cost me 60,000 yen. So they're not cheap.
No.
But in the end, I doubt very much I'll ever change it. So
yeah,
I guess that's reasonable.
It's pretty cool. And it's nice that, you know, with Titleist and TaylorMade and Callaway all bringing out a new wedge every 9 months or something, you know what I mean? And you've got this intense pressure, buy a new wedge, to be able to go and buy a wedge and play with the same wedge. Like I played with my first set of Mazdas for, I think 2.5 years. And I got this new set this year.
Yeah.
And normally with wedges, you know, people are tossing them away really, really quick. But, you know, you just get a groove sharpener and you keep them schmick the whole time. But they're just one of the great things about the Japanese wedge. And as foreigners, we always hear this all the time, like Japanese is different. You know, we have different medicines and it's very quite an insular place, but these wedges are literally made for Japanese grass. You know, the way the grind is and the way the bounce is.
You can only imagine the artisan culture, right?
Exactly right.
And actually, just while we're on this, just a quick shout out to Nisco Wow and the Golf Lounge. So if you've got a putter that is still perfectly good, but it's starting to look a little bit nicked, and not the face, of course, because if the face is nicked, then that's a problem. But if it's just starting to look a bit shabby or whatever, then I'm pretty sure that Ian and Kent and the crew can, what is it called, electrostatically cover it?
Powder coat.
Coating. Kent does what's a lot of refurbishment, on? So he takes old putters, and I think we've got a couple of Johns at the moment.
Have a couple of really that were going to absolute ruin.
They were going to go.
Scotty Cameron's, they were so rusty, I didn't know what to do with them. So they're going to bring those back to life. I'm very, very much, we may have to bring those onto the podcast when we see the results, because I'm quite excited about
this.
That.
Is part of your putter harem, is it?
Yeah. I got these putters just lurking around my house, you know, just in the corners and stuff.
So what Kent's done is we're finding old battered putters, and we're sort of, you know, sanding them back and taking out the dinks, and you leave them in an acetone bath overnight. You basically acetone you can buy, you know, whatever it is, a gallon or
don't drink that at home.
Don't drink that at home, but you leave the putter sitting in there. It'll take all the paint off, and basically the paint that you see on a putter is basically nail varnish, right? Nail polish.
Mm-hmm.
So you take all of that off, you smooth out all the kinks and everything. I mean, you use a blowtorch like you would start a barbecue with to take the shaft out, and then you smooth everything back. And then what we've done is we've got what's called a powder coating setup. So it's a electrostatic polymer when you basically charge the putter head as your
positive.
More
negative. I can't really remember.
And then you get a little pneumatic, a little air powered electrostatic gun that with a big tub on the top that you can put the powder into, and it charges it to it, attaches to the club head, and then you put it into an oven for 30 minutes at 200
and
degrees
do the great putter bake off,
and you just do the big putter bake off, and and there you go. So it's I tested on two of my putters to start with, and I got it wrong, got the curing time wrong, so I chipped them a little bit. When we got to Kent's putters, we did a much better job.
Right.
And they look amazing.
Absolutely. Yeah. The putter you're rocking looks great.
Yeah, that looks so cool.
It does. Yeah. And they can do that in matte and shiny, right?
Well, I just got a set of sample paints from Eye Candy. So
you can literally do anything.
We've got Shoyu, the Samurai Black. We've got Shoyu Black. We've got you know, ocean blue. We've got every kind of.
Presumably, Michael's driver now needs to be purple, right?
Yes. Yes.
So we need to turn his driver purple.
Electrostatic polymer.
Purple.
Yeah, and you can do you could do people's wedges too, right? In the same 100%.
I think it's a little bit different with wedges because there's a bit more impact. So if you have a black wedge now, I've got a couple of black wedges. They tend to scuff a little bit, whereas putters just stay really clean the whole time.
That's good fun.
Yeah,
and we're talking. It's a great feeling. Sort of the recycling of these old items of equipment that you kind of think maybe I don't know what to do without. It's sort of sitting around my house, or what should I do? It's really nice to sort of bring it back to life.
And sometimes you might have something that's actually worth a bit if you've got something that's a bit.
Well, you never know, right?
I think Owen at the moment is trying to work out how to refurbish his old.
He reckons he's got some pretty valuable pieces of kit, right?
Yeah, they were very.
These are Pings or something?
Mizuno, Nakajima Pros. Nakajima Tommy, who was there.
Yeah, Iron. Yeah, okay. Yes, yes, yes. Right. So they're probably collector's items.
They're
collector's
items.
Wow. Hmm.
So when he came, last year we hauled him out of retirement for.
That's right.
For the rider.
Oh, I remember I do remember seeing that.
You did beautiful.
And I play with blades. So we got to one of the holes and he sort of thinned one over. It was Izumikawa, 18, 16, par 3 over the canyon. And he sort of semi flubbed one. And I said, mate, why don't you try a club from the 21st century? Try this.
I might have been there.
You were
that
there.
Day.
It was you, me, Owen,
I literally remember that statement.
And he hit it. And Greg, to this day, maintains it's the closest he's ever seen anybody hit to a hole in one, right? Remember that?
Yeah.
So but when he put the club down, which is a blade, he just went, oh my God, this thing's enormous. Because he was playing with it was tiny, tiny little tiny.
They were about postage stamp size, so basically.
And then, how small golf equipment was there head-wise back in the day. So small.
I remember when Lenny, the beginning of last season, Lenny was playing with some old crap that he'd accumulated from the UK or something. And I'm like, Lenny, why do you never take driver off a tee? And he's like, this is my driver. This is a driver.
It looked like a hybrid or a three-wheel.
Well, the head used to be like this.
Big. Even smaller. I mean, it was
tiny.
Unfeasibly small.
Yeah.
But it was a driver. Yeah. He's since moved on.
Cool. That's very interesting. So Mazda... powder coating. There's a whole new life available.
I mean, in the end, look, wedges. You know, the God, there's so much equipment. Everyone's going to have their own feel. But the going back to it, the point is that you can demo this stuff. So as a point of, you should just any golf club you go to, they've probably got some demo clubs. You should always take some out. Yeah. Why not?
I would just, in addition to that as well, that when you do buy this sort of Japanese artisan sort of, they call it G-maker in Japanese, but when you get these local makers. I mean, I don't know if you saw, so my driver's a BB4, which is a Japanese like bespoke driver. It's a great driver. Bevan's thinking of getting one, and I highly recommend them. They're deep face, really, really. They've got a very unusual accordion compression system,
right,
which is completely legal. Mm-hmm. But he also had those Boldo wedges, which is the same ones that Josh has as well. And this, again, it's a very bespoke Japanese brand. But when you buy these wedges, you don't need to go and buy wedges every 2 years or something. You have these for a long time and
my next question, because I think we may have discussed it in a podcast, or I was discussing with someone recently that the pros change their wedges, I don't know, every 3 weeks, 4 weeks, 5 weeks or whatever, because their grooves are wearing out. But to your point, if you can actually redo the grooves on a super funky Mazda wedge, then it might last a lot longer.
Yeah, and a lot of that comes from the fact that they're getting free wedges, right? They're getting them whenever they want them, whereas we don't.
Oh, I see. They just do it anyway.
Yeah,
well, because you might as well.
Well, they're just like, they're just giving you wedges. So it's a luxury we don't have. But
true.
But if you get trapped in the wheel of it's the SM6 or the SM7 or the Titleist latest Vokey wedge, that you don't need to do that. There's a lot of good equipment out there. And Japan is, like you said, the artisan culture.
Right.
True.
Cool.
Okay, cool. I think, and so we come to the last regular section of the show, etiquette. I just think this is not an enormous section this week, but I think just something that popped up the other day was just about how about line putting greens, lines of putts, marking, how you move your marker, how to be aware, whether you should ask your playing partners, is that in your line, all that, that kind of stuff.
Well, let me.
And Ben, you said you had a recent pet peeve on this particular.
Topic. No, but before even that, I want to kick off with an apology to Ian. I think yesterday I was on a green and I thought I was doing the right thing. I came in to mark my ball that was, you know, it was about halfway between Ian's ball and the hole. Admittedly, I was there for one shot extra, so it's not, you know, not that impressive. But as I leant over, Ian said, well, thank you very much for standing in my line. And I'm like, absolutely sure I hadn't stood in his line, right? I mean, I'm 2 feet off, 3 feet off. And I said, well, if you're going to putt over where I've just stepped, then I think you're going to miss the hole. And we had a little moment, actually. And sure enough, he putted straight over where I hit my thing and got within like a whisper of the hole. So one thing you need to think about when you're walking around greens is not just like that straight line to the hole, but where someone might be hitting it, especially on undulating greens and stuff like that.
If you're on the high side and they're going to hit a breaking putt, then you always come from the low side to make sure you're not going to.
Exactly. Yeah, so I came from the high side instead of coming from the low side. I think most people will understand that. No.
Well, no, so normally you wouldn't mind because Well, I'm an etiquette Nazi anyway, but what's funny about the greens around here is that if you do step on somebody's line and you've got a size 12 and you weigh 102 kilograms, you will leave a dent on the green.
Oh yeah,
you know what I mean? It's like,
oh yeah,
it's like there's a big hole there. So
yeah, but my pet peeve. Just one thing that I notice is that in this. And I know that all our listeners and everyone around here and all the rest of it are desperately trying to get their etiquette better, you know, pace of play, blah, blah. We've gone on about it relentlessly. But so now a lot more people are rocking flat tees, which is awesome. I mean, just very, very, very encouraging, very exciting. I still don't tend to rock them myself, I have to admit, so I apologize for that. But it's okay to put a flat tee down. In fact, it's great to put a flat tee down. But if you put it down in a bit of a rush and you leave it at a slight angle, you're actually putting a little launch pad in the way between you and your opponent and the hole. And I have seen, I would say in the last 4 weeks, I've seen four or five of those hit and take a ball. Just like an unrepaired pitch mark would.
You don't tap it down. They don't tap it down with a putter.
So what I would recommend. I just think that it's all part of the same story we talked about. People get a bit freaked out, and we don't want people to get freaked out. We want people to feel relaxed around the greens and stuff, and relaxed with their etiquette. So when you're putting that flat marker down, just tap it lightly down on the top with your putter. That will make absolutely sure that it's flat. As Ian mentioned before we started the podcast, it doesn't really matter if you're coming from like miles away or if there's no chance really, but you know, trust me, if someone hits that flat marker, it's not going to be ideal.
Yeah. As a general rule of thumb, when it comes to marking your ball, if anybody else is nearby, the default question is that okay? Do I need to tap that down?
Is that in the way?
Do I need to move it? You know, that's a great approach, I think. So, and flat markers versus large. We definitely talked about this because I remember bringing up F19, trying to line up moving a marker towards a flag that was lying on the ground that later got picked up and didn't know where he'd line it up to. So, I think that the general rule of thumb is if you get close to the hole and somebody else is on the same similar line, you use a flat marker, you tap it down, and then you ask, is that okay?
Yeah. And some people may not be totally clear. So when you are, when if I am on your line and you say, and then it generally happens, right? So you just say, oh, can you move that? And generally the person who's putting will say, can you move that one putter to the right or one putter to the left? Because they'll have a sense of how their ball's going to move. And so you tend to just find some kind of thing in the distance, like a tree or an OB marker an that happens to be on your line.
Object.
An immovable object. Yeah, and then you just basically do that. And, of course, you've got to remember to put your ball back, and that actually even pros sometimes even forget to do that.
I had to remind Josh in our
quite open. Yeah, right.
Oh, is that right?
Yeah. It's so easy to forget. Phew. So it's really good to do it straight away. When the other person putts, do it straight
away.
All
of the other pros remind him as well. He went to mark his. We went to put the ball down, and everyone went, Whoa!
Oh, that's awesome. Yeah. That's quite nice, isn't it?
That's really nice.
Everyone
jumped in.
Because that's such a.
On that, this may seem a little aggressive, but these days for me, I actually go the full putter length.
Your whole putter length.
Just get it out of the way. Because sometimes, I think yesterday's case with Ian was a good example. I hadn't read the putt. He knew it was going to break by 2 or 3 feet. I essentially, wherever I marked that with a putter head was not going to be helpful.
Right.
But if I moved it a whole putter length away, and again, I don't, you know, one doesn't want to get overexcited about this, but that's, you're pretty much guaranteed to be out of the way then. Right. So feel free to be creative. And exactly to your point, and I think you brought it up. I think you guys brought it up on the podcast last week or the week before. I go straight back. The moment that putt's done, I go straight back and remark that.
Well, here's a really two interesting facts that are interesting about putting lines and marking and so on. Most markers will have two different sides. It's like a coin. And if you watch really good pros, let's say it's got a blue side and a red side, they'll put the blue side down. And then when they have to move the putt, they'll move it over to the red side to remind them that it has to go back again.
Right.
You know, I mean, if you see the same side all the time and you put it and you move it and you see the same side, you move back into your old routine.
That's good. You
got to change it over so that you can see.
Or for me, with my, you know, how I have my magnet marker on my cap. So if you just put it with magnet up, so you haven't got the lovely logo of what a golf course you bought it on, then it's going to remind you again.
Good idea.
Yeah. Another one with this is actually more with putting lines, but something that this kind of doesn't apply here because the greens aren't that tricky. But through lines is something that I don't think a lot of people understand. Do you know a through line?
Well, it's the other side of it, right?
So if you,
it's when someone's standing in front of you, essentially.
No, a through line is if you let's say you're going to go and pick up your ball or you're going to take your ball out. If that person misses the putt and they have to putt back again, there's another putting line.
Mm-hmm.
Being aware of that putting line and not stepping on that putting line as well.
Oh, that's next level.
Okay.
But that's good. That's next level and it's good. Yeah,
so you should kind of in your when you're on a green, extend the line fully past the hole, you're aware of potential lines. Yeah,
and then and the last one, which is really cool with putting as well, which is interesting. If you watch a lot of really good players that play a lot of golf, we played the past 2 days at Tower when it got really sort of choppy around the green. Bumpy as you're not, you know, it's like it's been choppy because everybody moves in and puts their foot right next to the hole.
Yeah.
And if you have a lot of people all putting their foot right next to the hole,
you end up with some kind of volcano type situation.
They call it the donut effect, don't they?
Yeah, that makes sense.
So again, it's another thing to think about when you're actually going to take the ball out of the hole. It's like, well, I need to try and stay as far away as I can.
Step away from the hole.
Stay as far away as I can and then take the ball out. Yeah.
Yeah. Very good. I think that's a nice. That was a very useful little.
I think that might be green etiquette level 2 and level 3. Two.
Yeah, yeah.
I think we might have got close to level 3 there.
Yeah.
As I said, there are always 5 levels of these etiquette rules.
There's always more. Yeah, and I think it's an interesting thing. I often think about it myself. If you get on the green, you may or may not mark your ball, but it's actually, if your ball's a long way away, to actually size up the line, I always try and like if I've got time, I try and do the whole 360 and sort of go all the way around. So if you've marked your ball and you're 40 feet away, you can't actually see where the marker is. So you have the dilemma, you leave your ball there, go and do the walk around. Meanwhile, other people are putting, your ball's on the green kind of getting
in their
way. But
actually, that's a good point.
So that's something I often sort of think about, you know, or you leave a more noticeable marker there.
Well, Ian brought this up. So contrary to what I said earlier about the flat marker, the good news about leaving a flat marker at an angle is you can actually see it.
Yeah.
Because otherwise you basically can't see those, right?
Because again, it's a good etiquette point. If you're a long way from the green, but maybe someone else is chipping on, but you want to get ahead of the timing and you want to start sizing up your putt, and it's nice to look from both sides of the hole. You don't want to take too much extra time, but you don't want to leave your ball there necessarily. So you leave a marker that's visible.
I think if you remember it's probably three or four podcasts, we talked about, in that case, communication is the key. Mm. Where is everyone? It's okay to say, hey, where is everyone? And people will go, oh, I'm here.
Walk on the green and just work out who's where. Where can I walk? And when you have a marker on the ground and it's a 40-foot or a 50-foot or a 60-foot putt, there's nothing wrong with jamming a tee in the ground behind it because you want to go and see what's going on. I mean, that's completely fine.
You can use anything to mark a ball.
I must say today, Ian and I played a nice game with Bevan. And Bevan is... You know, I honestly think Bevan is exemplary in this stuff, but he, you know, by his own admission, is still learning some of this stuff and more than happy to ask, you know, what should I do here? Where am I? What, you know, where can I go? Can I drop this? Can I do this? Blah, blah.
Yeah.
Cool.
All good.
Absolute pleasure to play with you
today. Yeah, it was. Yeah.
Fantastic. All right, guys, we are through. And so that brings us to the end of episode 9. Of the Rider. It's been a pleasure as always. Enjoy your golf this
Massive
week.
Massive pleasure.
It's post Obon, so the courses start clearing out a little bit. So,
and again, hats off to Michael.
Thanks to
get round of the week.
Shot of the week.
Just a reminder to everybody that I will be caddying for Scott Strange.
Oh, yes.
And Jimmy will be caddying for Q-Ball.
Does that mean you won't be available the Sega next Sammy. Week, or we're going to do this remotely, or what?
No. Next week's fine. This week.
Ah,
so he's going. Maybe so you're going for the practice round tomorrow. Okay.
Yeah.
Good luck.
So they'll win on Sunday, and then we'll be able to talk about it on Monday.
Oh, yeah. Well, awesome. We're actually.
You on the usual 10%? Are you?
I just need some Pro V1s. I'll be fine.
Just some Pro V1s.
No, but we did have a little. I don't know if you remember yesterday when Scott was practicing his putting.
Yeah,
I was there, went over and he was coming a little bit from the inside. Said, "Yeah, do this," and he just hold everything. So
I saw that
as I left. I just said, "You know, just practice your winning speech." And where we go. I also told him that if he does a winning speech, I'll translate and I'll just say whatever I want. So.
Yeah, exactly. God knows what will happen.
Well, that'll be superb. I look forward to that and hope some spectators are allowed, if at all possible. All right. Well, all the best with that. All the best to Q-Ball and Jimmy. And we will see you here next week again. Thanks, guys.
Thanks, guys.